Oh, this will be my first podcast interview, so I'm very excited. So I'm open to all of your tips and tricks.
Well, you're going to think, like, Jesus, like, what's wrong with this guy? Like, because I'm, like, I'm not flustered, but I'm, like, I didn't really do my greeting. Normally, like, I'll say, oh, whatever, whatever. I'm just going to make it up at the beginning, and we're going to start. It's just going to be two newbies talking to each other.
Okay, that sounds great to me.
Okay, sounds good.
Welcome to Season 2 of A Long Walk North. Today's episode is brought to you by Triple Crown Coffee, Purple Rain Adventure Skirts, and the Thruer Hiking Community. On today's episode, we have Alex, who is in this year's PCT class of 22. She hiked northbound on the Pacific Crest Trail this past summer, and she already completed the Appalachian Trail, and that's in her bag, when she was 23 in her gap year with almost no backpacking experience. A little bit of practice in what she called the Blue Hills, or that's probably what it's called, and a little bit of camping in her aunt's backyard. After finishing the trail, she kind of quoted herself saying that she will never hike the PCT 10 minutes after finishing the AT. Obviously, she's now grateful for being wrong. This past March, when I started to subscribe to different YouTube vlogs of just, you know, we're all excited to see this year's hikers and watch them as they scurry on through the desert, learning the PCT and what the desert can be like, she was one of them. And I was actually refreshed with her shorter videos, her just ramble-on thoughts, because she's sort of this salt-of-the-earth young woman finding her way up the trail, starting off with these short videos. Those videos stopped because she wanted to focus on her hiking and just be more present in nature and the people that she's around. I asked her through Instagram if she was interested in coming on our podcast, and she said that she was. So as she crossed the border from California into Oregon, she was at a family member's house, so she spent some time to record the first part of this podcast. You know, we'll talk about her desert, going into the Sierras, and just the wonderful people that she met along the way. We bounce around in this first part of the episode because I've never talked to her before. We didn't talk beforehand. We just sort of got on the Anchor app and just started. We were going to connect again up the trail, but that didn't happen. So after completing the trail, she took off to Europe, and then we sat down to record the second part, talking about NorCal, Oregon, Washington, racing to the border for August 13th when she had a flight booked on the 15th to head to Europe. I'll ask her if there's a chance of doing the CDT, since she didn't think she was going to do the PCT after the AT. Please take a listen. Don't forget to click on the show notes. I'll add links about things that we talked about. I'll bug her for some photos of her hike along the way, and I'll put some links to her social media. My daughter's not on this episode since she's busy with school and work, so depending on the length of this episode, I might add a little bit of a catch-up with Chantel at the end. In the description of this episode, I'll put some basic times to if you wanted to bounce around to listen to certain things. But here is my talk with Alex, and enjoy.
Charging down those craggy mountains with our thrift store friends, who you find so in love with the fallen earth, or you wake in the middle of the fallen night with the summer playing coy.
Hello, Dan.
So you are on the PCT. Let's jump forward and just, where the hell are you on the trail?
Right now I'm sitting in my cousin's office in Oregon, close to Ashland. So we just crossed into the border a few days ago, which was very exciting.
You sound like you're going record pace.
As far as miles?
Yeah. Does it feel like, do you feel like you would be where you are right now? Like, did you kind of think, yeah, I'm kind of on track, or you think you're going faster or slower?
I think that I was overly confident in my hiking abilities. So I actually think that I'm going slower than I thought that I would. The Sierra slowed me down quite a bit. They say that the PCT takes 4.5 to 5.5 months. So I was like, okay, it'll take me 5 months. But I think it's going to take me closer to the 5.5 month mark.
And, you know, sometimes it depends on like who you're hiking with too, because sometimes you might have to slow down for somebody, or somebody might be super fast and you're keeping up with them too.
It's true. I felt inspired to go my own pace this time. When I hiked on the Appalachian Trail, I met a friend, Cheeto, who I'm sure that we'll talk about a lot today, because she's very inspirational to me. But she's a woman that just does exactly what she wants to do when she wants to do it. And I'm trying to take that into this hike.
So sort of like that thing that everybody hates those words, but for you, this hike is a little bit hike your own hike kind of thing.
About that a lot. My friends will say that hike your own hike really means F your hike.
Yeah.
But it is. It is hike your own hike, but with love and compassion and understanding. Like right now I'm hiking with a woman named Little Stone, and she has a boyfriend in Portland, and he came down to visit her for a section. So it was, we made
a plan. You're the third wheel. You're the third wheel now.
No, I actually went ahead because I didn't want to hike 15-mile days. Yeah. But then she caught up, because then she was like, okay, well then I'll do 30-mile days and you'll do 20-something mile days. And it's hike your own hike, but more like rubber bands kind of pooling on each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a little bit of, hey, I'm going to do it on my own, or do something, I'm going to do it my way. And then there's always compromise, right? Like sometimes you will, you know, you sort of adjust to the other people and you go absolutely a little bit with their life, and sometimes they'll go with how your life is going, or sometimes you'll separate for a little bit and go alone for a little bit.
I think it's really beautiful because I'm at the stage of life, and something that I'm learning about myself is not to take things personally. Yeah. Like that, I think, is a life lesson that we all learn. Yeah. And this really reinforces that, because after the Sierras, the people I was hiking with, we all decided to kind of do our own things because we were doing so much structure. Mm-hmm. But then I actually got to see them yesterday, and Goose comes running over and gives us both hugs and is like, I'm so excited to see you guys.
Oh,
you know,
old friends. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. So it's like
old best friends, because it doesn't take long to become a best friend on a trail.
Old best quick friends.
Yeah, exactly. And you did the AT in 2018. So like, how old are you now? Like, how old are you when you did the AT?
So I'm 27 right now. And I did the AT basically right after college as sort of a gap year. Mm-hmm. So I did that when I was 23, almost no backpacking experience. My most practice people was, yeah. You like to hear that.
Yeah, like you probably played, because you're a little bit on the East Coast. So did you go, is there mountains in Massachusetts? Did you go north? You know, did you go to the Whites, or, you know, did you go?
We have a place called Blue Hills, and it really is just a hill. And my practice was hiking that with a cousin, and we got lost. And then I camped in my aunt's backyard, and that was basically my practice.
That's okay. You know, that's okay. So when you did the AT, just, you know, really quickly, how did the AT go? Was it grueling on your body? Was it good on your body? You know, was it hard mentally, or was it just a fun ride? Like how hard was it? How much did you enjoy it? Like, what was it like?
So I started southbound. So I think that was kind of like riding a bike without training wheels, which was really good for me. I think because I was young, I mean, I know I'm still young, but I was 23. So I was truly young. The physical aspects were not, I remember being very hard. I remember my backpack hurting at first, but I think I bounced back like super quickly. People talk about through hikes in thirds. They say the first third's physical and the next third's mental, and then it becomes spiritual.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I've never heard of that, especially the spiritual part at the end, you know? And that's,
really?
Yeah. Is it more of like just like you're really reflecting on life and where your life is, you know, where it could go in the future? Is it a lot of that? Just thinking about.
Yes.
Because it must be emotional too, because you know the end is near as you get closer and closer too. So that's.
It was so sad
in a way, but you're proud.
Yes. The mental part was really tough for me. I think that second stage was the hardest because, you know, if you're an athlete, if you've played any sport, if you've done a hard thing, you know that the physical part you can push through. So I think pushing through the mental part was a real challenge for me. I think I was just sick of mice eating my food and being dirty all the time. And I had reflected on what I wanted my life to look like. Mm-hmm. So I was ready to just start living that life.
Yeah, you just wanted to kick the world's ass. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I've done this and let's kick the world's ass.
But then I'm glad that I waited because that last third was really beautiful. I think I, as a person, relaxed. I came into myself. I was vulnerable with friends. And it's just like a big wash for your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad that I stuck it out that I got to experience all three parts.
And then, so you finish the AT, you go back to normal life. And sometimes, you know, that's fun. It's an adjustment. It's hard, you know, all that kind of stuff. You're not used to having showers every morning. And then, when you finished the AT, was it in your blood? Like, did you know, hey, I'm going to do the PCT or the CDT next? Or
absolutely not.
When did it click? Like, how, I want to know what's the time frame of like, hey, I'm going to do the PCT and that's 6 months from now or a year from now. When did you kind of make that decision?
I made that decision in January of this year, a few days before the
second.
Come on, man.
That's not true.
It is true.
That's crazy.
It is true. I my friends asked me on the AT, you know, is anyone going to do the PCT? And I said, absolutely not. Like this was fun. This was really hard. I think I'm good. Like I've gotten what I need to get out of this. But the thing about life is.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm still, I can't process it. It's like, because like even the money part.
Yes. Ugh. Yes, it's true. I was really lucky on the AT. I sometimes call it a tour de aunts. My mom is the youngest of 11 siblings. So I have aunts and cousins just scattered
on
the East Coast.
You need that on a t-shirt. You need that as a patch on your backpack.
Tour de aunts?
Yeah.
That would be a fun patch. So that helped with some of the monetary stuff because they'd be able to pick me up and I could stay with them. And even now my cousin, he's mailing me hummus. I get a text at least once every 2 weeks that says, hey, you need more hummus?
I did, you know, like you have at this time, you know, you have like the three videos, you know, so I did see you eat olives and hummus and just little things on a wrap. And I thought that was cool. So just really quick, it's like, boom, like January, you're like, I'm going to do this. What was your start date?
My start date was March 7th. So what happened, for folks that don't know how the PCT portal works, you basically open it up at a certain time and then you're put into a random lottery order for mm-hmm. when you get to select your date. And my wait time was several hours, but I was texting with a friend and he's going southbound. So he got into the permit system before me. So mm-hmm. he let me sign up with his permit spot because he knew it would be less. I know, it was so nice of Dreamer. He knew it would be less competitive to get a southbound permit. Oh, hi, Henry.
You can have one of these if you want.
Oh, thank you.
Is that snacks? Are you getting snacks?
These are snacks for my cousin's kid. Thank you so much, Henry. I'm talking to a friend right now on the phone.
Okay.
But I'll come back up in a little bit, okay? Thank you.
You're going to inspire Henry.
He is very excited to hear about, we're going to set up my tent later so I can wash some sap off of it. And let me go back to your...
Yeah, I'm bouncing around.
Early start. My friends that had already done the PCT, the only times that were left were May, like late May and early March. And they said that early March was certainly preferable. So that was my decision.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a little bit colder in the desert or whatever. And maybe it's a little bit cooler. Like, you don't get the heat. Doing it early March, it's definitely doable. I mean, it's always sometimes people are always worried about the what's the Sierras like, what's the snow and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
And so that's awesome. So off you go. Now, did you do a lot of research? Did you try to do a lot of research? Are you the type of person like, I'll figure it out? Like,
I'd like to say that I strike a balance. I was very nervous though. I was very stressed. I really don't know what possessed me to make this decision. I think I was reeling from a cold New England winter. The pandemic in America was a doozy.
Still lingering.
Yes, a little bit. Still lingering. And I was just ready to have some fun. So I knew that it was going to be a good decision for me, but I was quite nervous because I haven't really hiked in snow before. And I knew that that would be a big aspect of this.
Now, is there anything that you can pinpoint that you're worried about, whether it's a section or mm-hmm. an animal, an insect? Was there anything that you can pinpoint that you were worried about?
Certainly the snow and the cold. I wasn't, because on the Appalachian Trail, I went southbound. So I really was just treated to really consistent, lovely weather for the most part. And I know that me as a person, I don't deal with the cold well. So that was one piece of gear that I did decide to change and invest in. And I got a 10-degree bag because I just was not willing to be cold. And I texted my friends that had done the PCT. And my first questions were about the cold, how worried I should be about snow. Do I need an ice axe? They said, you know, it's going to be okay. You're going to know if you need an ice axe. You can get one. Like, that mm-hmm. can be a decision for later. My second one was about using the restroom on the PCT, because on the Appalachian Trail, there's outhouses, there's privies, you can bury your toilet paper, but on the PCT, the soil is such that you can't do that, and there aren't established privies. So that was my next question.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, I've never had to do that yet. Me and my daughter have to practice that, but
yeah.
You know, and yeah, that's always hard. And then the PCT scares me because you feel like, you know, you're out in the open, you're just staring at people like, yes, don't look at me. Don't look at me. I don't know.
I did have, some of us camped in a meadow one of the first nights in the Sierras. And Rocket was like, okay, if you see me in the morning, just know that you don't see me. If you think you see me, it's not me.
The Sierras and stuff. And it's just like, oh my God, I didn't want to think about it. But it's a way of life.
If it soothes your soul, I haven't been seen or seen anyone using the restroom in the wilderness.
That's the way you gotta think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Other things that I was nervous about were certainly rattlesnakes. The Appalachian Trail does have rattlesnakes. So I had, unfortunately, had that experience already of one coming down the trail, right when the sun's in your eyes and you can barely see anything in front of you.
Do you have things in your ears? Like, do you listen to tunes, podcasts, audiobooks, or are you just like, for the most part, don't?
I do usually listen to something. The mornings I find that I'll let my mind wander and, you know, it's a fresh day. What am I going to do? Daydreaming. But then the afternoon drags. So it's nice to have some entertainment.
Because I'm scared,
but I just do one. One earbud.
Yeah. Okay. Because that's what the part that scares me is. Like, I don't really want to listen to anything. I want to be able to hear rattlesnakes.
Yes. I had seen. I think I've seen 5 rattlesnakes at this point, and only one of them rattled at me.
Oh, there you go. They're trying to mix it up. They're having fun. That's what they're doing. They're just having fun.
I'm not too worried about them ever since I saw a friend. She stepped like right next to one that was coiled up, like right next to one, and it didn't do anything. So I'm like, okay, they're just like other animals. They don't want anything to do with us.
No, they don't.
They're not going to go out of their way to hurt us. So
no, unless they have friends watching and they're like, hey, watch this. Watch what I'm going to do.
It's amazing to me how I'm not afraid I am of those things anymore.
Are you, like, are you a chicken at night? Like, I think there was in one of your vlogs, you had a, you know, you had a night where you were alone.
Yes.
That freaky?
It was a big deal to me because it was the first night alone. I don't know how I did it on the Appalachian Trail, but I never spent a single night alone. Because no matter what, you get to a shelter and there's a section hiker there, a northbounder there. But this was going to be my first night camping alone in the woods. But I had phone service, so it didn't really count. But since then, I've slept by myself a handful of times. I couldn't even tell you how many.
That's good.
Yeah, it was kind of like once I got over it the first night, and once I'm asleep, I'm asleep.
Yeah, you're a hard sleeper kind
of
thing.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful thing to hike all day and then to sleep hard. But I got up in the morning and I felt so myself. I felt so confident. I was grooving on the day. Nice. It was like I was shocked by what a powerful experience it was to sleep by myself.
Yeah, Wonder Woman or whatever.
A little bit, because there's something very primal. Like, I am afraid of the woods at night. Like, and I can tell you that, and I've spent months outside.
Well, yeah, everybody gets the EBGBs, and yeah.
I don't know, it's worth it, though. Anyways.
Yeah, even if you're scared of cowboy camping, of things crawling in your mouth, or I don't know, they're crawling in your sleeping bag to find warmth, you got to do that.
The other thing is, I just tell myself, it's not going to happen. Because the worst case scenario is, sure, it does happen, but I'll deal with it then.
Or if you get little bugs that go in your mouth and they hang around, then they get out in the morning, you didn't even know. It's like the pooping. Like, you didn't see any bugs. Bugs didn't see you. You didn't know about it.
Ignorance is bliss.
Have you had any encounters of, like, stranger danger or, like, creepy dudes and stuff?
That is a good question, I think, especially for, a woman on the trail.
Sure.
I've never felt uncomfortable.
Good.
On both trails. And I appreciate you asking that. And my aunts ask about that too, and friends at work. But I'm really happy to report, and I want to tell all the other young women, it's a safe place. I feel genuinely.
Yeah. And you know what? And like, look, I'm an older dude, right? And so, like, you know, sometimes you just want to like chit chat with people, but older dudes need to be conscious. Like, sometimes, you know, there's older dudes that have like the purest intentions and they're just doing small talk, but you have to be careful because from another person's point of view, you don't know how they're reading it, and they could be reading it wrong, and you could be making them feel uncomfortable and all that kind of stuff. So it's just something to be aware of. You know, even in today's world, like the language people use, or sometimes like the jokes that people do, you know, you don't know these people sometimes. So you have to be conscious of that, because even if they're laughing at your jokes and stuff, you might be offending them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like something to also remember too.
I find that on trails, people are very willing to be vulnerable. Like, I think sometimes when people make a joke, they're trying to connect. Mm-hmm. But I also think that people are very willing to call one another. Like, I've certainly had it happen where people say, oh, you know, I hear that, but this is really what I think. And I think it's lovely because
no one's agitated.
It's conflict, and conflict is fine. Or it's not even conflict, but it's.
Yeah. It's education or what, I don't know what the right word is, but I know what you mean.
And I also think that, being out here, I think you know that everyone has good intentions. And I think it doesn't
unless
seem to matter your age.
Unless you're the bald guy that everyone talks about every year. Watch out for this bald guy that, like, you know what I mean? That guy, I don't know who that guy is, but every year it's like, watch out for this guy. Because hopefully he's not listening to this and tries to find me, but whatever.
I think
DePaul's
maybe
you didn't do any research, so you don't even know about this bald guy.
Are you talking about, like, a threat on the trail?
Yeah, there's some guy that maybe nobody's been talking about it this year, but last year, he was kind of seen. He's kind of around the San Diego, around the beginning part. And
I'm glad that there's no talk of, you know, this James Perello, who's about 53, slim, kind of fit, says he's a retired Navy SEAL, but he's just sort of this bald, Marc Messier-looking kind of guy. So in 2021, there was a lot of chitter-chatter on Facebook about watch out for this guy. He's kind of seen on trail, especially the beginning part, you know, between San Diego and Julian. And there was a lot of talk, a lot of people posting his photo and sharing it. From backpacker.com, there's an article, and I'm going to list this in the show notes, but there's an article by Bill Donahue. It was done December 17, 2019. It's called Kidnapped on the Pacific Crest Trail. A would-be thru-hiker hit the trail to change her life. She knew about the natural hazards, but it was the human threat that she never saw coming. And it's a story about a woman, Kira Moon, who went missing. She later died in a suspicious house fire, but it's basically a story of an alleged kidnapping and rape on the Pacific Crest Trail. Now, no charges have been filed against this alleged perpetrator, but prior to those alleged crimes, this guy was accused of mistreating a number of women. He's never been criminally charged or convicted of such behavior. But this story was sort of based on the statements that the accuser made prior to her death, interviews with more than 20 witnesses, and a review of public records. But I'll post that. It's always good to be careful on trail. So obviously I was making a joke about this bald guy, but I would say he's no joke. And I think it's good to sort of just have an understanding of what he looks like, because you know, and there was rumors about he was on the CDT because, you know, there's a lot of people talking about him on the PCT and even the Arizona Trail. So anyways, well, I don't even want to run into the guy. So, okay, back to the interview.
Yeah, I think when there have been actual threats on trails, people are pretty good about putting the word out.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Did you play around on Facebook and stuff, or? And with all the little groups and stuff, or not really?
Yeah, I'm on the PCT hiker page, and I'm glad that it's there. I feel like once you're even just a few hundred miles in, the page starts to become, it's so many things at once. It's funny. It's a place for people to ask their honest questions. It's a place for trail angels to say, hey, I'm available. But sometimes it is just...
Oh, yeah. Once Facebook knows you like hiking, it will show you, you know, that's all you see. You don't see your friend. Like, I don't see any friend stuff on Facebook. It's all this PCT class of this, and whatever.
Really, I feel like that page is kind of fear-mongering a little bit. Yeah. It'll be like, I've seen a rattlesnake at this mile, and this mile. And it's like, the thing about rattlesnakes is they don't stay in one spot. And I don't know. I know it's people trying to be helpful and kind to one another. It's like a bathroom reading, I feel like.
Yeah, exactly. So off you go. You're on the trail. I mean, obviously, you're farther north now, but just generally, you know, what was the desert like? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you know, you're a wuss at night with the cold, but you got a better bag.
Yes.
Did that help you out and stuff with the cooler evenings?
Definitely. And I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico, originally, so I know that the desert is misleading. Yes. It is very cold at night and in the mornings. But the wonderful thing is just wait 30 minutes and it'll change, you know?
Or get up and go. Get exactly. Some miles in, you know, and you'll warm up. And at least, you know, hopefully you have an early night. You get into camp a little early. Mm-hmm. And you can enjoy the sunset and cook something good.
Absolutely. The desert was great. For me, it was, I think I was most surprised about wildflowers. I was imagining in my head that Northern California and Oregon would have quite a few. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly still wildflowers, but the colors in the desert, that was shocking to me. And the snow. The snow picked up right away. You start in the San Jacinto. There's the San Gabriel. Yes, a lot of snow and a lot of trail magic. I feel like Southern California.
Oh, everyone's excited. The newbies are starting. Oh, yeah.
I thought it was nice because even though I'm not in the bubble right now, trail magic is like, I think that when people plan trail magic, they're like, okay, when are most of the hikers going to be coming through?
Sure.
But I really appreciated that some previous hikers were like, well, people start in early March. I'm going to bring some donuts and apples to Scissors Crossing. Yeah, lots of trail magic. And then we got into the Sierra. The friends that I was hiking with, they were very excited for the snow, the change of scenery. I was feeling very hesitant. So my first experience in the Sierra, you have to start with like an 8-day food carry, a 7-day food carry.
There you go. Right off the bat.
Yes. I think it becomes 8 days if you want to do Whitney, which I did decide to do. And then we did the tallest pass in that very first section. So in that way, it felt good to have the highest point done.
What was the snow like up at the top when you do that little sort of that little catwalky thing? Was there snow there or no snow?
Oh, it was covered in snow. So I didn't really realize what a pass was before I started.
Yeah.
I just couldn't picture it. So I was walking up Forrester, slogging through the snow at like noon or something like that. And I was like, wow, I wonder when I'm going to get to the pass, not realizing I was already working on that pass. But I was able to do some of the switchbacks, but most of it was covered in snow.
So you just went straight up kind of a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. And then there was a cornice where the snow melts kind of the underneath part. And there's a little bit of a bulge you have to get over.
Okay.
But I was lucky enough to get to do it with two of my friends, Fahrenheit and Clara. And then when we got to the other side, I could see the trail cut across like a traverse.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw everyone else had presumably slid down and glissaded.
Yeah.
And I had never done anything like that before. And I was like, I don't know that I want to do that.
Was the snow soft or hard when you were doing that? Because there's a big difference, I guess, that when it's hard, it hurts.
Absolutely. It was soft. It was perfect. I was laughing the whole time. I'm glad that Claire and Fahrenheit convinced me to do it because it was one of those things that I was very hesitant about. But it turned out to be one of the best moments in the Sierra.
See, I'm a heavy dude, but you're very light, so you probably didn't like fly down in like record speed.
I don't think so.
But it must feel fast when you're doing it, though.
Oh yes, and I mean that Forrester is a great one because it bottoms out at a frozen lake, so it would be really hard to hurt yourself under the conditions I was in.
Good.
Yeah, it was good. So it was a good practice slope, if you will. It was really big, but I felt safe.
And then even just to back it up a bit, like just talk about like who was your little buddies that you know you kind of started with, I mean, you know, or who were the main
characters?
Yeah.
So I started, my mom dropped me off. I was lucky enough to have her drop me off at the terminus, and I posted on the PCT Facebook page and said, hey, anyone else need a ride? Because I'm going from San Diego to the terminus.
Okay.
And Sam and Mariah answered me. They have a YouTube page too.
I've watched a couple of their videos. I have them bookmarked. I'm gonna watch, like they're on my, like to watch even just for like research and stuff. Cause they look like a great couple.
They're very sweet. They're outdoors people.
Like, and they're fast. And I think I did see them in one of your videos, and I thought of them as like, oh, they're really fast. And that's why I asked you at the beginning of like, are they pulling you? Are they making you go faster? But I don't even know if you're, you know, still with them or all that kind of stuff.
No, they're ahead now. I think that was a case of they get up so early and I don't feel that need. So it was, we were hiking together, but I think it was more out of each of us doing what we wanted to do and then still getting to be together. Like it was, I think, more of happenstance than out of planning. But then once they got into the Sierras, I think they really felt more comfortable. So I started hiking with a different group of people.
Okay. So who, yeah, tell, I'll be quiet, but you tell me more of like who's your buddies.
So I got into Bishop, after getting off Kearsarge Pass, which absolutely drained my entire being. I remember sitting in the parking lot and, eating the very last of my peanut butter and tortilla and saying, okay, I need to find a way to make this fun. You know, like I can't just be doing this. I'm out here to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm walking down the streets of Bishop on my second Zero, and Zeb, this very bubbly person from New Zealand, he has bread in his hand, he's unshowered, he says, firecracker, why don't you come sit with us in the diner? Would you like some bread? just this warm, welcoming energy. So I join some people in the diner that I've seen before, but haven't really been hiking with.
Sure.
They're all in these matching Hostel of California t-shirts. and I've already made my plan for the next section, and I hand it to them because I'm a very organized person. It's written by day and start and miles.
Are you a journaler?
I am a journaler, and I'm a highly organized person.
Do you doodle little pictures and stuff too?
Sometimes. I haven't had the time to get to do that yet. Mm-hmm. But I share my plan with them, and they say, this is great. We love this. Why don't we all hike together? They say, we're just trying to have the most fun we possibly can in the Sierras.
And that's what you're looking for. So it's like a perfect match.
And that's what I do. That next stretch, we decide to, basically the rule is to get as close to the next pass as you possibly can.
Yep.
Wake up super early, just get it done. The alpine start 5 a.m. And then we all waited for each other at the top of whatever pass it was. Cause that was kind of a rule. My friend that I'm hiking with pretty consistently now, Little Stone, she really is not a fan of the snow. Like she's deeply anti-snow. And, she communicated to everyone that she was nervous about the passes. So we all decided to wait at the top, basically every time. And then we'd go down and do the traverse. Then we take a beautiful long siesta lunch in the sun at a river. It would be everyone napping. I was with about 10 people at that point.
Do you nap or you stay up?
Oh, I nap. I snore? Love sleeping.
Do they tell you you snore?
I do snore, yes.
There you go.
There are sometimes I love sleep so much. There was one day in the Sierras that I picked to sleep during lunch instead of eating lunch, only because we were so close to camp and we hadn't been sleeping that much.
You can eat and walk too, a little bit too.
It's true. So I was like, I'm just gonna sleep in the sun. But those are the people that I'm hiking with now. I spent most of my time in the Sierras with three other people.
Mm-hmm.
Little Stone, who I've talked about, she's from Portland and she's lovely. Lost and Found, who's hiked the AT before, and he's just a big softy. And Goose, who's from Sacramento and is
I think a of very Top goofy. Gun. As soon as you say Goose, I'm thinking Top Gun.
His name morphed his trail name. His name's also Alex, so I was very dedicated to getting him a trail name because every time someone said Alex, I was like, what? But he loves birds. He's like a real bird enthusiast. And we were walking through the Sierras when the grouse were very active. Okay. Have you ever heard grouse, Dan?
I don't know. Like we one of our podcasts, we talk more about like, I don't know, the facts about it. We talked about animals and I Googled it because my daughter didn't know what it was. I kind of didn't know what it was, but no, I have not heard it.
They make this sound that is like a bass, like you feel it more than you hear it. But we got to see some grouse puff out their chest and make this sound several times in the Sierra because it was their mating season. So at first his name was Silly Grouse, and then he was like Goose for short, which doesn't make any sense, of course.
No.
But it became clear that he wanted to be called Goose.
Right. Well, that's cool. Are you still Firecracker? Are you something else?
I'm still Firecracker. I feel like the name suits me and I like it.
I always wonder if like somebody has a trail name for the first trail they do. And then the second trail, should they have a different name? Like, do you think they should have a different name for the second one? Or
I feel like a name is a name, but I also think that it's whatever that person wants.
Yeah.
Like Mariah, I know that she had a trail name before on the PCT when she did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time around, she dropped that name.
Said, you're going to be my in. I'm going to bug you. When they're done and they, you know, get settled, you're going to ask them. Because I'd love to interview them. And I'll watch, and then I'll watch their stuff too. So if they want to. Have you been shooting a lot of video and photos? I mean, obviously you should take photos. Do you wish you took more video? Like as of now, do you wish you took more video? Do you wish you took more photos?
In some ways, yes, but I know that I'm taking enough videos. When something's when I'm like really sitting in a moment that's really full of joy or funny or deeply sad or beautiful, I do take out my phone to take a short video. So I think that I have what I need. Mostly I'm keeping a journal that's the 1 second every day. I don't know if you've seen that app.
Oh, yeah. I've done one for like 2 years. It's fun.
I love it because it's such a low bar to entry.
It is. 1 second video. It's frustrating because sometimes you can't capture a whole sentence. So then I started to cheat and I do like, oh, if I had 4 seconds of goodness, I'll take up that. And then they turned into like little vlogs, but hike your own hike, do whatever you want. But yeah, 1 second every day is a great way to get the ball rolling.
Yes. And it's a nice way, you know, you're not handing your phone to someone and saying, watch this 20-minute video of me so I can tell you about the Sierras. It's 30 seconds and you get a good feel.
Exactly. Even though I talk about pictures, like people talk about sometimes that at the end of the through hike on that halfway anywhere thing, people talk about, I wish I took more pictures of the people I met. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's hard to take, you feel funny taking pictures of people, yes, but you just got to do it because I think it is nice to like remember the people you bump into, even like little bits, even if it's not your trail family. I'm sure you got tons of them, but you know, it's some of the other people too that you might have spent just one day with or 3 days with.
I think it's absolutely something you have to be intentional about. And there are a lot of people out here that are people that will say, you know, we're sitting outside at Kennedy Meadows, a bunch of hikers that, yeah, it's a bunch of different trail families. And someone says, do you mind if I take your photo? And it's, no, of course. You know, I appreciate that you want a photo of the people.
Not a random person. You kind of know them a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or even if you don't know them, a friend knows them very well.
Yeah.
But I do think it's something you have to be intentional with. Like yesterday we got to take a zero and we went swimming in the Illinois River, and Sherlock said, you know, let's get a photo. She took the time to set it up. We all moved. It maybe took 3 minutes, but I'm glad we have it. And I think the other thing is to, there are a lot of times that you pass a border and yes, you're passing it with your trail family,
yeah,
but you're also there with, you know, some folks you just met, but you know, you're all still in that moment together. So whoever's there at the time, I like to get a photo with everyone because you're all there at that moment. And isn't that special?
Sometimes it's neat because I've done wedding photography. So sometimes it's neat to kind of shoot. Like if I had a trail family type of thing, I would want to shoot a little bit of photos when they're not expecting it, because I'd want to give that to them, because it's kind of nice to have pictures taken of you, whether mm-hmm. you're laughing, you're telling a story, you're hiking. It's nice to have also pictures of you in the moment. And so it's nice to like share those with you. I mean, you know, definitely do that with your trail family because you're not stranger danger to them. You know, I wouldn't do that to, you know what I mean? But you know what I mean?
No, it's true. And we've done AirDrop. AirDrop is a wild, magical sorcery.
Yeah. I never thought of it. That's something that's really good for all the iPhone people. You can just kind of and you can even share some.
And you don't even
need service.
People
forget to take pictures of certain things, like, you know, and it's cool with that. I do that with I'm rambling now, but you know, I do that too with my kids. We went to Europe, but we all took pictures. So we all shared them afterwards, and you could do the same thing because somebody, you might have a better picture of Forrester Pass than the other person, but they were there. Absolutely. You were there with them on the same day.
And I think, yeah, it's really great. Like Sam and Mariah, Sam set up a time lapse because at the time I was carrying a phone stand. But I wasn't going to set that up. But then in one of my videos,
you're just carrying the phone stand. But
exactly. I said, Sam, can I post that? And so I said, borrowed with permission, Sam and Mariah, PCT. So it's like sharing things is really beautiful. And you can give credit where credit's due if someone took, you know, like a really stunning picture that they edited.
Credit. Some people do.
Yeah.
And I totally get that.
A lot of people don't.
Don't forget to follow us on social. Our handle is PCT Just Do It, which is PCTJSDoIt. @DoIt. We use that handle on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. You can find links to our social channels and other links on our website, hikethepct.ca. And when you hit the menu on the website, we have other things, like our gear lists, PCT trail notes, projected expenses, current savings, and other links and other information about our hike.
All hail the underdogs, all hail the new kids. It's our time to make a move, it's our time to break the rules. Let's begin.
Hey, me again. Here's the second part of the episode. Gonna apologize in advance about the audio quality. Alex is on her phone. Like I said, she's in Mini, waiting for a friend. I'm at the local library. I'm in a small little room, so I kind of sound like I'm in a closet. Her audio has a little bit of glitches, because obviously we record this using the Anchor app. Anchor's owned by Spotify. And it kind of takes our voice channels and puts them into the cloud. So there's a little bit of glitches, I guess, as the internet picks up, if I guess the signal's a little bit weak. But I do my damnedest in Audacity to clean it up, and I did a good job. And this episode is really nice to listen to, so I want you to enjoy it. Here's the second half of the episode with Alex as we recap the second part of her hike. Enjoy.
So you want to just get started and we'll just see?
Well, yeah, I'd love to know how you're doing and how your daughter's doing and if there are any changes in your PCT.
Well, you can ask me anything. Like, when we're talking, you can ask me anything.
Okay.
I wish she was here on the line. She's not, but she's a hard person. All you young people are hard to get a hold of.
Isn't it so weird? A world of infinite outreach, and I think it speaks to us all needing a little bit of space and time and maybe less stimulation.
You know, it's hard too, because it's like, you know, when my daughter, she sees my texts. I know she sees her texts. I know she's in her texts all the time, right? But she doesn't answer me right away. It's like she'll answer when she has time. I know I would get pushed down because all her friends that she types are close 12 or close 6. I just get pushed. But she knows it's there unread. And I don't get the read receipts. She, you know, she shuts that off. She doesn't share the Snapchat. I can't look in the world of where she is, you know, like where a little cartoon little dude is. Especially if I'm asking her for money, like PCT money to put into stocks, because then she won't answer right away. Or she'll say she'll do it, but then, you know. So now I put in my Google Calendar, like, when I know when she gets paid, right? So I'll bug her like 2 days after payday when she's rich. Because she's really
that's amazing thrifty. that you're investing in stocks to start saving for your trip.
I know, but stocks are down so much. So I want to do a van trip with my son for 6 months and go around the states, and maybe the PCT money will be the van money, and I'll just have to replace that money with other money because things are down so much, like 70%, 60%. It kind of sucks.
It does suck for short-term saving plans, yeah.
Yes. On the line with us is Alex. She's a PCT hiker that hiked Nobo on the Pacific Crest Trail on her Tour de Anse.
This time...
What?
No Anse on this one.
I wish. No Tour de Anse on the second part of it?
No, my aunts were on the Appalachian Trail.
Oh, okay, well, look, we cleared that up.
And I did see some cousins on the way and some other family members, so.
You did, in Ashland?
Yes, in Medford. I have a cousin there, so.
And there was two little boys walking to you to the store.
Yes, it's very true. You do a good job with research. Yeah, so it's my cousin. Her name's Katie. She is sweet. She is a mom. She is protective. She is loving. She is accountable. And in some ways has been like an older sister to me because we did grow up together in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad and my dad are best friends. So when I got close to town, I let her know, and she picked me up in her beautiful car and said,
I'm going to wait to give you a hug until you shower, Alex. And then I met her two sons. And yeah, they're 5 and 2. That's approximately accurate. And we had a really good time hanging out, wearing cotton dresses, eating sandwiches, just feeling cared for.
Yeah, you were waiting for lunch, and one of the little guys came in and told you, like, lunch is ready.
Yes, Henry came in, and he got my hiking partner and I, Little Stone. He grabbed us some dried fruit from the store. I am a good eater. I think that I talked about that last time, but my hiking partner, Little Stone, she's a registered dietitian, so we love eating. We take it very seriously, and we try and put some of the best things that we can in our bodies while backpacking.
Well, that's good. I mean, sometimes you got to let loose a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're very calorie positive, and like, I must have had at least a Snickers bar every day, but I just mean like nutrients or interesting things to eat or as many vegetables and fruits as is reasonable. Those kinds of things.
Did you gain weight? Did you lose weight or stay the same?
Definitely lost weight. I think that's pretty standard.
Yeah. Well, some people gain a little, I think, if you're just eating trash, I guess. You didn't eat trash.
I really tried not to. My goal on this one was to treat myself as well as I possibly could.
Well, your body's a little machine, right? You got to fuel it. You got to put something
exactly.
good in.
Exactly.
So, and you started off obviously in March, and then so I thought you'd be home now, but nope, you're in Minneapolis because you have a wedding. So that's super cool. Is that like, do you have like festivities? Like, is the wedding on Saturday, and then you got like a rehearsal dinner? Is that tonight or tomorrow?
Yes, the wedding's on Saturday, rehearsal dinner's tomorrow, and Minneapolis is where I went to college. So I extended my trip a little bit so I could see my friends that are still in the area. One of them that I'm going to meet with in a little bit, her trail name is Mojo. She hasn't done she hasn't done a long trail, but we've backpacked some of the 100-mile wilderness together. And she's the one that I went to Italy with, actually, which I did right after the trail.
Okay, that's awesome.
It was literally like I finished hiking to the border on August 13th, and then I had to walk back to Hart's Pass because, you know, you have to walk the 30 miles back. You can't just exit through Canada. So then that was the next day. And then my friend from Seattle, Pale Ale, picked us up, brought us to the Massima store, 2 veggie sandwiches apiece. And we slept the night in Seattle, and then I flew out the next day. So it was like no time in between.
No. Do you wish you could have like gone into Canada and then maybe go to like Vancouver and then celebrate and then come back? Like, is that a bummer?
I would have loved to go to Canada. I don't know that it's necessarily a bummer. I think that the part that was actually the quote unquote worst was just having to walk 30 miles back to Hart's Pass instead of 7 to Manning Park.
Come on,
if you go
now.
Through
not,
Canada.
Not going to Canada, that's a bummer. You can, that's the truth. It is the truth.
No, I know who I'm talking to. I do love Canada. I think it's just PCT was the adventure, not necessarily visiting.
Well, that's true.
Visiting another country.
Yeah, that's very true. And then in true typical Alex fashion, 7 days after completing the trail, you posted on Instagram about it.
Yes, a little later. Well, because you kind of need some time to sit with your thoughts, and I wanted to give time and space that it deserved. Doing treks like this really are chapters in my life, and the reflecting part of it is really important to me. And I don't think I can do that. The reflecting is different when you're in it. And then afterwards, it kind of feels like maybe a little more clarity. Like I can tell the things that I got from my hike.
You started off doing YouTube, and then you kind of abandoned it because you wanted to like hike and stop editing and playing around with footage and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, it's not like you were a super Instagrammer. Like, everyone's different, right? And I don't even know how you even do social media, you know, or, You know what I mean? Some people post a lot, some people don't. Some people just post a little bit more because they're doing the PCT and they feel that they got to update family and friends a little bit, even if they're not even a... Some people just get Instagram on day one of the PCT or a couple weeks in because they feel like they got to just do something because everyone's wondering, are they alive and where they are? But
it is a really special experience.
Exactly. And I think the way you are is, I think, you know, you're just like, you rather soak it in. You don't, it's not that you're a super sharer, but soaking it in, just being in the present was more important than, you know, making videos. Do you think though, now that you're home, do you think you will take some of that footage and maybe not make episodes? Because some people do, like, they edit all their episodes when they're done, and that's just crazy. Do you think you'd, like, would you ever want to make, like, even a short little 10-minute kind of, or, you know, a little summary? Or no?
I've definitely thought about it. I appreciate that you can tell that I would prefer to live in the moment, but I am happy to share about my experience. There's nothing that I'm unwilling to share, and I do value authenticity on something like this because sometimes you can really get a highlight reel, and it, you know, people get discouraged because they think that it should look like this, and they're having a different experience.
Right. Very true.
I have thought about editing. I think that, as we talked about before, I actually do remember this part of our conversation. You asked if I would get back to it when I came back after my trip. And I said that I'm not sure if I will, because on the trail, there's a lower expectation for the content that you're putting out, because you're also hiking and you also don't have access to all of the things that we typically have access to in a normal life. So I will be sharing. I'm just not sure what form that will take. I am making a PowerPoint presentation for my coworkers.
Oh, that's cool. Are you going to make it vintage? To me, PowerPoint's vintage. To you,
it is vintage. It is, but it's also, you know, there are different lenses to share a story. And so my coworkers, that audience, I really do like my coworkers. I can be very honest with them, but still there is a level of professionalism there. So I'm not going to share videos of my disgusting feet or of how dirty I am. Or
people want to see that though. Some people want to see blisters, even if they don't want to like zoom in with their eyes. They just want to know there's a blister there, but they don't want to focus on it and it grosses them out.
It's true. So the structure for my PowerPoint is the 5 different sections of the trail: the desert, the Sierras, NorCal, Oregon, Washington. And then I'm including the highlights, the moments that were really difficult, like the reasons that I struggled, and that I learned along the way. So I don't have all of it done. I've only worked on the desert portion, but it's been very fun. Just the process of creating is what I enjoy, and it helps me get more meaning out of my hike.
And that's sometimes the fun thing. Like if you ever try to make like a little movie, it's fun to make. I mean, you end up like, oh my God, it's 3 a.m, but you just get engrossed and just, cause you start to relive all these little clips when you're watching it, you're remembering where you were and how you were feeling. It's a fun thing, but it depends on how much of a perfectionist you are too. And some people just, you know, it's everyone, whatever, you know what I mean? It's just like everyone does it differently. And I would love to see your PowerPoint presentation.
When I'm done with it, I will definitely share it. Really, I'm thinking too, that it could be something that I share with like school students. It's certainly a goal that I have to share about my PCT experience. For me, just there are so many methods that I could share and create and document.
And so the last time we talked to you, were in Ashland, and you were just about to get on trail. Now, obviously, you know, we didn't connect. I think we were going to connect in Bend. But you know what? It's kind of good that we didn't, because now we can just sort of talk about the trail and a little bit of after the trail. So I guess, I mean, NorCal, people talk about like the NorCal blues. It took forever to get out of California, 1,700 miles. Did you have the blues? Did you, you know, or was the trail, like, do you think of the trail, can you remember the sections in a way? Or do you just feel that it's all this hodgepodge of blur of all the feels? Like, you just remember there's good days and there's bad days. And sure, you might remember some of these days, oh, that was in Oregon or that was in Washington. But did you have the NorCal blues?
It's interesting. I don't think that I'd heard about the NorCal blues until you just posed that question to me. I'd heard about the Virginia blues for the AT, certainly. I think that there perhaps was an element of that. I think for me, NorCal, it was monotonous.
You just want to get out of California.
You just want to... You have in your mind the promise of Oregon, and there's water and interesting new features. But NorCal definitely had its highs as well.
Was there crazy ass bugs? Like, I don't know, do mosquitoes bite skinny people, or is it?
Yes. Dan, I don't know that there's anyone that I've ever met that the mosquitoes love more than me. I had to transition my outfit again, because I needed to wear bug pants. And it started in NorCal and then Oregon and most of Washington. I heard from some people in Oregon that this was one of the buggier years.
Okay.
But I can confirm that it was a truly horrible, horrible experience to be around the bugs. Let me put it this way. If I needed to stop, I would need to keep walking back and forth. Like, I would need to pace. So that way the bugs wouldn't have the opportunity to bite me. Little Stone and I had many a lunch where we had to eat our wraps in our bug net. And I would put my, I'd like to take off my shoes for breaks, because I think that's important.
Yes.
But I would need to put my feet in a bag so that way the bugs wouldn't bite my feet.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Thank you.
Was it like such a blessing if like it was time to stop for lunch and just magically, oh my God, where are they? Let's not talk about them. Let's not jinx this. But was that just such a sweet moment where you could enjoy lunch and it wasn't, or was it just like bugs all the time?
What I'm remembering right now is truly bugs all the time. It was probably a month of bugs. Our timing was just kind of poor in that regard, because as you know, Oregon and Washington had more snow this year than in previous years, and it melted later. So as the snow melt was happening, we were just like following it.
Oh.
And it's when everything's wet, of course, the mosquitoes are breeding. So we just truly got wrecked. And I personally, yes, was destroyed.
Do you, so obviously after the Sierras, sometimes, you know, people get rid of maybe some Sierra stuff, but was there any, whatever you consider luxury items, did you have any, what you consider luxury items that you carried after the Sierras to the finish? Or were you just hardcore, like ultralight?
I am absolutely not ultralight. I don't think that anyone could look up my setup and say that. But there was a period in, I'd really loved, I think it was Quincy, California, which is right in the heart of NorCal. Well, maybe not right in the heart. Honestly, that's like kind of right after the Sierra, where I just looked through my bag and I was like, what can I get rid of? Like, I am tired of carrying so many things. My food is heavy. Like, I want to make room in my bag so I can carry the food that will sustain me.
Okay.
So I dropped my Camelback. It's not very common to see Camelbacks on a through hike. Most people do, you know, water bottles. So I switched to that. What else did I switch? I got rid of a lot of my warm stuff. I got rid of my melee, like my middle fleece layer.
And now, wait, that's new to me. What's a melee?
A Melanza hoodie.
Oh, okay.
People call them their smelly mellies.
That's new to me, but I get it.
I think the only thing that I carried that any a luxury item was I kept a few postcards and a pen with me so I could write to people. That's if I cool. wanted to. Yeah.
Some people get rid of a puffy in Oregon and they switch to fleece just because of the rain.
Mm. In my mind, I would just rather have a puffy than a fleece. So I did the opposite. I kept my puffy the whole time. to go back to NorCal blues,
yeah.
I think I mostly experienced that only because in the Sierra, you're walking with a very like specific group of people because, you know, it's a tough environment.
Sure.
So you're accountable to other people. But once the people I was hiking with, once we got out of the Sierra, I think everyone just wanted to take a big sigh and do their own thing.
Okay.
So I think NorCal was exciting for me because I was more independent. Sometimes we would just rubber band back and forth. Like I wouldn't see her until yeah. town, or she would let me know that she's going to be a day ahead. I'd get the opportunity to hike with other little bands of people. So not so much That's NorCal cool. blues, but it was a little monotonous, I think is the word I want to use.
Obviously, you know, you get into Oregon and we talked to you in Ashland and at that time we didn't talk about, and I didn't know, and I kind of took the summer off. I stopped kind of watching YouTube. I got outside more and soaked up the sun, but I knew there was some
forest fires. Wait, it's supposed
to be. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, sorry, Dan.
No. And, you know, we didn't talk about forest fires, but was there any fires that worried you? Did it hamper you? Did it impact you? Did you have to go around? Did you have to miss any sections?
Mm-hmm. I think that all said and done, I am a very lucky northbound hiker because there was only one section that I had to skip along my through hike. And I know that many people this hiking year in 2022 were not so lucky. They didn't even get to touch the border and they had yes. to skip hundreds of miles. I only had to skip one section in Oregon. I don't remember the name of the section, but I know that we got off. Where did we get off? Close to Sisters.
Okay.
And then we spent a day hitchhiking because we just didn't want to be stressed about it. And we didn't want to get a fine. We heard that there were dangers in this section that if you were hiking, they could get you I think it was a $4,000 fine. It's like that would really put a damper on my whole experience. Littlestone and I decided to hitch around. So it was 100 miles of trail that we skipped. Some of my friends.
That's not much. It's
not much. Some people walked through it. Some got more creative and they got people to take them down dirt woods roads. So they only 30 miles or so. But for me, it's definitely about the smiles and not the miles. Like, I think there's something to be said for doing the thing that you set out to do. But I think that there always has to be room for flexibility. And
now you do, especially with forest fires. It's yes. ridiculous. I mean,
you have to be flexible.
And pandemics and yes. bears and scary people. Like, I scared you, didn't scare you, but I asked you, like, is there any, like, creepy dudes, right? And I was telling you about this ball.
Oh, we did talk about
that. I was listening to a podcast about the AT. I didn't know mm-hmm. there was like some knife stabbing dude in yeah. 2019. And I was like, I listened to the podcast and I had to Google him. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
It's certainly scary to have those experiences happen on a route that is glued together by trust and humanity and faith in others.
Mm-hmm. It's very rare.
And it is. It is very rare. That's the important takeaway is that it's, you are statistically far safer on any patch of the woods than you are walking around a town or a city or driving.
Absolutely. I think the only thing to worry about is, you know, some dude that just wants to get you drunk and kiss you. And
where is your head going, Dan?
I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, you know, that's what I mean. Like, I think, you know, with my daughter being 22 and, you know, it's like you can have that danger, not on the PCT, but you go to any bar and
it's,
you know,
true. Yeah. They're seeking control and power. But you're right. That is something that unfortunately,
like, that's more of a concern, really. That's probably, you know, that can happen. You could probably experience that a couple times during the trail if you're young and,
or not even on the trail, but just honest in life.
Yeah.
Like here I am sitting at my college campus and those are experiences that my friends and I have had or,
sure, you know, or heard about or happened to other people, you know, or whatever.
But it never happened to me on the Pacific Crest Trail or the Appalachian Trail. I felt
that's good.
Really supported by everyone who was there. And I had friends looking out for me and myself included.
Absolutely.
So it's a safe place.
When you switched and you got into Oregon, did your mental state change? Like, oh my God, I knocked off a state. Did it change a little bit? And plus you get like, you know, California, 1700 miles, Oregon, let's just call it, I don't know, 500 miles or something like that. You're like, ooh, this is just a walk in the park. I mean, some people try to finish that in 2 weeks and go nuts on it.
Remember the day that we walked into Oregon, I was just smiles and I was listening to Madonna's Borderline on repeat, and it felt like, honestly, getting to that border felt almost as good as getting to the Canadian border. Like, that felt momentous because that state represents, it represents starting, represents getting through the desert and the Sierra. It represents resilience. So I think getting to Oregon was a real switch flip for me personally. For Oregon, I don't know what I was hoping for. I think that I certainly thought that Oregon would be easier than it was. It was still tough. Like, people talk about it being flat, and it is, but you're still walking 30 miles a day, and it's still tiring on your body. So in that perspective, it didn't change. And then you get to Washington, and Washington, Little Stone and I called that the boss level of a video game. Washington will eat you up. Like, it was still mosquito, like the south bounders, because we finally ran into south bounders around Washington, Oregon. And they were like, oh, the mosquitoes are so bad that direction. We're like, oh no, we have bad news. So there were definitely mosquitoes. The mountains, it's just, you go straight up and straight down. Like, your whole day is, and then you go up and then down. And you're so remote, like Stehekin. Have you heard of the town Stehekin yet?
I have. I want to get research. Those big cinnamon buns that are as big as my head.
Yeah.
But I don't want to pay the cost of them because that's an expensive little place a little bit.
It is. I must have spent, I don't even know how much at that bakery, but I have no regrets. Honestly, it was really good. But that's just such a remote place. And you have to prep your boxes ahead of time. I'm trying to remember all of the other things that were difficult about Washington. I think I was just really exhausted. It felt like all we could do to just keep going. And of course, I made plans for myself to go on that trip to Italy afterwards. And I decided to do that because I wanted to have something fun to look forward to before I had to transition back to working and moving and, you know, existing in this version of reality. And I thought, you know, why don't I try and take my special trail self and go on another adventure and see how I do there, you know? And I don't regret that choice.
Did you feel that when you were in Oregon, sure, you see the present all around you, but do you have Washington in your mind? Because it's next. Like, are you always thinking about Washington, but you're in Oregon? Like, sometimes you're thinking of the finish line to, like, it's getting nearer, or at least, you know, because Oregon's so small. But did you find that you were just sort of dreaming about Washington and finishing?
No, I set smaller goals. Like, when we were in Oregon and we did the 100 miles where we had to skip around the fire closure, the next stop was the Timberline Lodge, and they have a buffet at Mount Hood.
Did you eat it?
Somewhat famous. Oh, yes. So we were excited for that. And then in a few days, we got picked up at the Bridge of the Gods, and we went into Portland, which is where Little Stone and her boyfriend are from. So
yes, I remember you said that.
We had a really fun time there for a few days. And then at that point, we knew that it was like, I don't know, 22 more days of hiking or something like that. It was like, we know what we're going to do. We know when we're going to be, where we're going to be. And we had a plan. That's when it felt like, okay.
What's some examples of some days where you're just like, you can kind of remember, like, your mood or spirit just felt like the highest?
That's a lovely question.
Like, could that be
mood,
like,
your spirit felt the highest?
You know, you could have been just such a good mood just being in Portland, of just thinking about how much you traveled, or getting into a certain town, or just being in a certain place, whether it's Goat Rocks or whatever.
Oh my gosh, Goat Rocks was so beautiful. The thing that I like about myself is that I don't know what I'm walking towards, really. Like, I hadn't done that much research on what.
No, you didn't do that much research. That's what I was giving you shit for, because you're like, come on, I don't believe you.
No, I really, I don't. And so, yeah, turning a corner onto Goat Rocks and seeing the meadows and the flowers and the snow on the top. And it was just completely stunning. Like, that was, to me, and I definitely felt very present there. The next day, we made it to White Pass, which is a gas station where we have our resupply boxes. And yeah, made it there right before it closed. And I was a little bit hungry, and my friend Puffy P danced me in. She was like, firecracker. So that warmed my heart. And then we had a little party with some Southbounders. And unfortunately, the mosquitoes made us retreat to our tents before we could really get up to any trouble. But it was still a lot of fun. Another moment that I felt really alive and present and grateful was when Megan and I were in Stehekin, where that bakery is that we talked about. we had not made lodging arrangements. We didn't, you know, we were just kind of figuring it out. And we were standing at the post office with all of our baked goods, just saying, wow, I don't know what we're going to do. And this woman, Mandy, comes up to us and says, hi, do you guys know where you're staying? We said, no, not yet, but we're going to figure it out. And she goes, oh, okay. Well, I have a guest house that if you wanted to, you could stay there. And yeah, just a complete surprise. This town of 87 people. And she picked us up in her Jeep, and she gave us a cute tour of the town and showed us her garden. And we met one of her sons, and just to feel so cared for and to be in such a beautiful spot right before, like, that was the last town stop. It was like, okay, I can make this. Those were two moments that stick out to me.
What about, you know, the Lowest of the Low? Have you ever heard of that group, by the way? Lowest of the Low? They're a Toronto band, a little indie rock band.
No, probably, I haven't.
I'm going to send you a link, whatever.
I like indie rock.
Yeah, but you know what, though? They were kind of popular in, like, 1989. Like, what year were you born?
95.
Okay, that's like...
Before my time, as they say.
Yeah. They have some cool little songs. You know what? When I was with wifey, we did a two-week trip. We went from Ontario to Nova Scotia. But we went through Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. Wow. And we had a Lowest of the Low CD and a Buffalo Tom CD. And, oh my God, we played it to death. But that just reminds me of, like, New Hampshire, Vermont, just the mountains and, like, Lowest of the Low songs. It was awesome.
Those are really pleasant memories to think of when you think of the phrase, lowest low.
Well, yeah, but look, for you, like, what's... Is there any, like, examples of days where you're just, like, really down in the dumps? Like, because you didn't, did you have any injuries?
I was thankful enough to not have any kind of injury. My feet certainly hurt from the wear and the tear. I was exhausted for days after. But the lowest moments, ooh, okay. A good one just
and you can even backtrack. I mean, even if it was in the desert of the Sierra, like, it's all good. Just, like, whatever, like, the lowest of the low.
Well, certainly in the Sierra, I'm happy to talk to you about a pass called Donahue Pass.
I heard about it.
And at that point, you've done a really good chunk of the Sierras. You've done some of the harder passes. You know, you're feeling pretty good. So my trail family of four, we made our plan for Mammoth, and we said, okay, at this point, there's probably so little snow on the passes. It doesn't matter if we get up super early. We can just hike these whenever we want, mushy no matter what, so it doesn't matter. The first day we hiked pretty far, we realized, oh, shoot, like, you. Let me go back into my memory, Dan. Give me a second.
Yeah, it's all good.
Okay, so I think the first night we didn't camp, wanted to. So then the next day was Donahue. And that was the day that each of us hiked Donahue on our own. I really imagine being a fly on the wall at the top of that pass and just seeing four people pass by there at, like, between, like, 3 and 5 p.m., just post-holing up to their waist with both of their legs, just having an absolutely miserable time, like, sliding down things. I didn't know that I was going to be, like, not okay. Like, that sounds a little scary, but I was like, wow, Alex, you really need to focus, because you can get frozen in a post-hole if you really... you know, don't get it together. And yeah, you can slide, and there are some scary parts if you're not kicking in your steps. And we each had a horrible day that day. That was definitely a low. I remember getting to camp and us having dinner, and We usually play a game that's what is the best and what is the worst part of your day. Okay. And that day, I don't know that we said a best or a surprising. I think we just talked about the worst. So that was certainly a low of just feeling exhausted and walking through slush. Comes to mind is in Washington. It was one of my last days. Little Stone and I, sometimes we would share a bear hang bag, like a rope. So only one of us would have to throw it. So I go to put my stuff on her rope because she's already hung it. It's night. I have my headlamp on. I'm like, okay, just got to clip my food on. But I lose the end of it. So then I have to throw the rock again. And the rock gets stuck on the branch because of course it does. So I pull, and I know that I should, you know, pull it around a tree so it doesn't come and whack me. Yeah. But in my current state of mind, I'm like, whatever, I don't care. So I pull really hard and the rock comes and thwacks me in the hand. And I was just like, wow, that hurt so much. Like that had all the elasticity of that branch and all of the acceleration of it too. And I really don't want to throw a bear bag at night, but I have to because I've now ruined Little Stone's bear hang. And, you know, this is what we have to do today. So that was a low moment. I remember being just a little pitiful, really.
Did you cry ever?
I cried when that rock hit me. Absolutely. But honestly, I didn't cry due to physical discomfort often. Crying is good and important, and we all probably should do it more. Mm-hmm. But I do remember crying in the Sierra quite a bit. Honestly, it was because, like, doing emotional processing from things that you haven't really sat with or given the space for. Like, thoughts
like stuff
when you're
before
hiking.
The trail even started, just your own
absolutely.
Life stuff.
Absolutely. And it's so nice because you realize the things that you're thinking about, those are the important things in your life. And it's okay if they sit with you really heavy and they elicit a response like that. So I cried several times and they were all for emotional reasons. One time it got me in trouble though, because I was just sitting, filtering water, crying about a nice thought that I had. And this man comes through the woods and he sees me crying and startles me. And he's like, oh, it's going to be okay. You're going to get to town soon, huh? And I'm like, okay, I'm not crying about any of that, but thank you. Really, I'm fine. Yeah. So he goes on and he runs into the rest of my trail family and is like, oh, yes, I saw a firecracker. She was crying. Don't know what's wrong. And they were so concerned for me.
They almost hiked backwards probably.
They waited for a good long time, which was thoughtful, but it's like, no, I crying to me isn't good, bad, or anything like that. It's just crying.
Any 3 a.m. crying just because you're like so cold and you're like you can't sleep but you can't get warm and it's just not time to hike yet and you got 2 hours to kill?
No.
3 hours to kill? That's good.
I sleep well and I sleep warm. I got a 0-degree bag and I have no regrets. And honestly, Dan, when you're doing it, you're going to be so exhausted. Nothing is going to keep you up.
I'm a snorer too. And I got like drummer earbuds for my daughter so that she doesn't have to listen to me. But she'll be so tired. Like she'll probably, well, what is she going to do? Like, you know, go get your own tent. You know, like you want to carry your own tent, but whatever.
Want to you guys
she might
see. Do you know?
You never know. We have too big of a tent too. We have a 3-man MSR. We call it the bear burrito. So but I'm scared just we won't find a little spot to put it, but it gives us more room to put our packs in.
Oh, absolutely, there's plenty of room, don't worry. For a while actually I had to carry my friend's 3-person tent because my tent was being repaired. So my friends from the Appalachian Trail, Odie and Pretty Feet, sent me theirs. And I was just rocking this tent mansion for one.
Yeah, exactly. You should, like, host a party.
I did. My friends Lost and Found and Little Stone. One night we just, I mean, I think maybe there were bugs, maybe there weren't. I don't remember. But, yep, everyone just brought their stuff and we had a little party in my tent.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
No.
So obviously, you know, you talked about, you know, like your you did give us a little bit of a Washington recap. So without talking about the finish, were you in general, were you really, like sometimes people to get to that finish line, the Canadian border, they're going fast because they need to race because of bad weather, snow, that kind of stuff. Did you have any kind of time constraints that way? Or were you just based on the time, you know, you were in August, beginning of August or whatever, was it that much of a race or were you just like moving at your pace?
It was certainly a race. And that was a result of me purchasing my flight to Italy and knowing that I would be flying August 15th. So I needed to make it to that border by August 13th. So with that in mind, Little Stone and I, she loves planning. I do too. I would tell her how many miles we needed to average a day. And that's how we did Washington. We knew that we had to do, I think it was 24, 25 miles a day on average. And at some point it became 27. It was just a haul. It was us just being really focused, not a lot of margin for error. And I don't know that I'd recommend it.
Did you like that stress? Some people like that stress. Some people don't want that stress. What's your take on it?
I think some people perhaps do need it in order to finish. And nice to be able to chill, to be able to take the time that I wanted to take. But ultimately, I got to finish with a bunch of really lovely people. I finished with Little Stone. I finished with my friends Reds and Pascal and Goose. And then when we turned around to Hearts Pass the next day, we saw our whole gang of friends behind us. Bungie and Queso and Puffy P and 50 and GB. So I ultimately wouldn't have it any other way.
Okay, that's good. Now, sometimes people wish they could even slow down on the trail as a whole. Do you kind of wish that a little bit? Are you happy with just like the pace of the whole trail as a whole? Do you wish you went slower?
I don't know that I wish. I don't know that I wish that I went slower.
Okay, that's cool. Do you wish you had more zeros?
I wish that I split up my zeros a little more fairly throughout the trail. Like, I think that I took, I don't know how many, 7 or 10 or something in the desert. Maybe not that many. I'm not quite sure how many, but more than half of them probably took place in the desert.
Well, you got to train a little bit, right? Like, I guess at the beginning.
Sure, but I was averaging like 14 miles a day then. Like, I didn't need all those zeros at that time. I think I was just trying to wait for the snow to melt a little bit in the Sierra, but it was not melting. Yeah, is there anything that you want to ask me that you're curious about for your hike, that you're nervous about, that's on your mind right now? Or
You know, it's sort of like I'm a desert expert because I've watched so much, especially when, you know, when the PCT, when everyone starts hiking, I'm watching everything on YouTube, right? I got like, you're watching like 14 vlogs in a row. But it's like, Washington is very like, I don't know nothing about Washington, really. Like, because I kind of stopped watching vlogs. So they're all on my watch list. But
yeah,
was there any like, and you had some snow and stuff. Was there any sketchy parts in Washington for you?
Sketchy. I think that the sketchy part, quote unquote, for me was I didn't do a good job budgeting food for that period, as in I didn't carry enough food with me. I carried, like, you progress up. So I was carrying what I'd been carrying since like NorCal. And at that point, my body was in such a calorie deficit for such a long period of time that it was like truly scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, you're eating yourself.
Yes. So I think in that way, Washington, that's one thing that I would note for Washington. Another is that it really is remote and it is stunning. Like, I also wish that I gave myself more time in that state just because it's a state worth savoring.
Yeah, really. People really gush about Washington, and they are, and like everyone's, it's a race for everyone, right? And they all wish they could slow down more, but I hear it's just incredibly stunning.
It is. There's a hostel too in Washington, and It feels more remote. It feels a lot like Maine in some ways. I know you said that you've been to Maine, but it feels like Maine to me on the Appalachian Trail, just because it is the end. And yeah, you're trying to hit that balance between savoring the moments that you have left, knowing that you're going to miss it, but also just something that we talked about. And I think it was unique because you have to hike back from the border to Hart's Pass. It's sort of like this reunion for your last 3 days, because on your day going there, you're seeing people that finished 2 or 3 days before you. And then when you're coming back, you see people and it's like, everyone says, ah, how are you feeling? Do you feel any different? And it's like, no, I don't feel any different. And then it's, what are you most excited for? And everyone is, I'm excited to eat whatever I want, whenever I want. I'm excited to sleep in a bed. I'm excited to go to the bathroom sitting down. Like,
yeah,
as my friend Goose says, it's the little luxuries, but they really are luxuries. It's not needing to filter your water. It is being able to call the person in your life that you want to call whenever you want. It's being clean and picking out an outfit. It's having your favorite beverage for breakfast. So for me, of course, the takeaway that I'm hoping to sit with a little bit more this time is just the gratitude for the little luxuries in life, because they really are luxuries.
Did you ever have any like money fears and stuff going into like Oregon or Washington?
Because I'd done the AT before, I roughly knew how much it would be per month. So I was definitely lucky in that it wasn't a huge issue for me.
Okay, that's good. Because I mean, you didn't really, you know, you didn't, like, it's not like, you know, you thought about doing the PCT for 4 years and you had 4 years to kind of maybe save. And, you know, maybe people don't save because they have 4 years and stuff like that. I mean, sometimes their hike is sponsored by Visa or MasterCard.
Oof. Yes. So I'm working on getting better. I actually would really like to start being better about my finances, but I essentially have two modes, which is save mode and spend mode.
Sure.
So I was just in ultra save mode since the pandemic started. So I had, you know, X amount of dollars, and that was for the through hike and for Italy. And now back down to zero. So now I'm in ultra save mode. But it's, I want to start being able to save for the things that you need to save for in life, like a home or, you know, emergency fund, those kinds of things. So,
yeah. Okay, we're almost at the end then. So, like, tell us what was, like, Terminus Day like? Like, where did you wake up?
And Terminus Day.
What was that, you know, walking to the sort of the finish line? What was that? Was it emotional? Was it?
Okay, Terminus Day. Little Stone and I woke up 16 miles from the border, maybe.
Okay.
And we woke up bright and early. We hadn't seen our friend Goose since Portland. But he knew what day we were going to finish, and we told him what day. And he just pops his head out super early, and we're not even out of our tents yet. And it's like, Goose, hey. So then we all make it to the border. It's like mostly downhill. You kind of have to go uphill a little bit. I remember being super dramatic and super, like, just kind of over it. Like, Little Stone has a video of me where she's like, how are you feeling? And I'm like, I am just so freaking over going uphill and being cold, and I'm ready to be done. And then we get to another great thing that happened before the border is a section hiker who we met at Rainy Pass a few days before. We just met really briefly, like we all had dinner together. Mm-hmm. And he remembers me saying how much I love cheese, so he brought Little Stone and I a cheese stick for our for our last day. And as I said, I didn't pack enough food ever in Washington. So it was like not only a huge morale boost and a hugely kind thing to do, it was just like I needed it. And it was awesome. And then we got to the border. We had lunch. We signed the logbook. We took our photos. Megan and I, the first thing, Megan is Little Stone. The first thing that we did was her parents had sent her a Maker's Mark old-fashioned kit kind of thing. So we made ourselves old-fashions. But
I was going to ask you if you had anything, like, you know, to celebrate.
it was that. And we were kind of dehydrated that day and hadn't eaten our lunches yet. So we're standing on the top of the monument, drunk off of, just one. So that was kind of the energy. And then we all camped kind of at the same place. And that was the energy of that day. It was.
And then it was the race to go to the airport.
Yes, it wasn't a race to get to the airport. It was just, I think the only reason that the border wasn't super, it was a little anticlimactic only because you were still in the woods. You still had another day. You still had 30 miles to walk. Like it's big, but it's like, well, yeah, and you're not done. So,
no,
but it's kind of that way in life sometimes too, you know, like you can't just celebrate the huge moments because honestly, you don't know how you'll feel and it's just one moment in time. So you have to celebrate all of the little moments in between because that's really what it is. It's all about.
Absolutely. And then off you went to Italy. How long did you go to Italy for?
I was there for 2 weeks with my college best friend.
And where did you go in Italy?
We got to go to Rome. We went to Florence. We went to the Cinque Terre.
That's such a little spot. I've never been there. I've been to the Amalfi Coast. You didn't go to the Amalfi Coast, did you?
I don't think so. But you've been there?
I flew into Naples and went to the Amalfi Coast. But that's about it. But I used to work for an airline, so I get excited for other people's trips. But I think it's awesome that you went to Rome and probably got on a train and went to Florence. Then you went to that little place, which is like really cool, but so small.
My friend's off of work and I'm giving her a hug now. So I'm going to have to get off, Dan, but I've had a good time talking with you.
Yes. And so thank you so much. And you probably did send me a link, the playlist, because I'll bug you later for it. But have fun at the wedding. Congratulations. And I think I still subscribe to your YouTube thing. But if you do post something on YouTube of a little video or even a PowerPoint, I want to see it. And then
I will certainly let you know.
And can I ask you one more question before you go?
Yes.
You think you'll do the CDT? Do you think you'll change your mind? Do you think you'll change your mind and do it?
No.
It's a hard no?
It's not a hard no. I think if anything, I would section hike the CDT. But I don't see myself having that amount of time and money and wanting to backpack in a beautiful but remote area. I think it's just a little too hard.
Okay, that's fair. And it's a good chunk of time. Last question. If there's one trail that you'd like want to go anywhere in the world and do, what would that be?
The TA in New Zealand.
So do you think that's a possibility?
I would love it to be.
You love it to be. Okay, cool. Well, I hope you have many, many more adventures, whether it's in your own backyard or wherever. So,
thanks, Dan. And happy trails to you.
Thank you. Okay, take care.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Longer and longer stride. Skateboard affair with a primal tribe. Charging down those craggy mountains with our thrift store friends. Who you find so in love with a fallen earth. Who you wake in the middle of the fallen night with the summer playing coy.
Here is the last teasy commercial. If you heard this a couple times, just end the episode. Have a great day. Hey, Dan here. We decided to make a little Facebook page for the podcast. So if you search on Facebook, A Long Walk North Podcast, it should come up as a page. And we just thought, you know what? It will help with engagement, meaning if you have a question for us, if you have a question that you want us to answer on the podcast, ask it. Put a comment in any post. If you have any feedback, whether it's a certain episode or just in general, things that we're doing right, things that we're not doing right, things that bug you, any recommendations, suggestions, any guests that you want us to reach out to see if they'll come on our podcast and talk. But anyways, we have a Facebook page. We're not going to post a ton of stuff, but it will help you alert you if there's something new. So go find it. Put a link in the description for the episode as well. Okay, enough of this. On with life. Talk soon.